This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Hello, it's John Williams, and Ben Wink joins us now, economy reporter at Business Insider, the website businessinsider.com. Hi, Ben. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me again. Good to be here.
I don't know about quit rates. What are quit rates?
So it's essentially the number of people quitting per 100. So, you know, obviously in a state like California or New York, you might have more people quitting, but if it's a smaller share of the total population, and that's what quit rates, that's what that gets at.
Is that a metric that you all have been following even before the pandemic? That's been a thing all along?
Yeah, so it's something that we followed, but not nearly as closely until, obviously when the pandemic hit, but really once the labor shortage started picking up. I think quit rates, job openings, and labor force participation, I mean, those kind of took a backseat to things like the unemployment rate. But with so many businesses trying to fill their job openings right now and that being a really big struggle, we've been looking at stuff like this way more closely than we used to.
Yeah, the government shut the economy down. The virus didn't. The government did because of the virus. But I think it's important to understand how we got here with the understanding that if we gave people money to get along and then when it was safe enough to go back to work, everybody would go back to work. A lot of people didn't go back to work. So is it that population of people that quit? Is that what we're talking about?
No, this would be, I guess early on it would be that, right? There were layoffs, there were mass layoffs and separations. And a chunk of that were people quitting, right, looking early in the pandemic. And that was for a variety of reasons, right? It could be virus fears, if it was someone who maybe worked at a restaurant or a movie theater, something that where you're seeing a lot of people. It could have been just an inability to afford getting to your job and child care expenses, those kinds of pressures. But now what we're looking at is people who are quitting their jobs, but there's an abundance of job openings and companies are desperate to rehire. So it's a very different kind of environment. And the fact that quit rates are still pretty high in some is, that it's a totally different dynamic.
Is it geographic? Have people quit their jobs more than other states? Where does Illinois fit?
So Illinois actually has one of the lower quit rates, matching areas with really dense metropolitan areas. Illinois, California, Texas is also relatively low. The quit rate in Illinois, just for reference, was 2.7% in December. We got that data today. But you look at the other states that have really high quit rates, and that's Florida, that's Georgia. It's Alaska. Alaska actually had the highest in December. Looking at how the Omicron variant spread through December, in the early stage of that wave, those states with the high quit rates were also the states that had some of the highest case counts per, 100 or 1,000 residents. So, even today, as we're seeing these Omicron cases drop pretty steadily, that's really the story of the recovery and the labor market recovery in particular. These states that weren't able to, that had a much larger spread in December were the ones that had, much higher quit rates than other states.
Yeah. I want to move on to some other things, but are the dots connected this way then? So in the states, the red states that were loath to comply with masks and other kinds of guidance about COVID. So maybe they got COVID worse and therefore the quit rate in those states has been higher. Is that how these things all line up?
I wouldn't draw a direct connection. I mean, there's definitely some, I can see why people would say that, and there's definitely some similarity. But you also look at states like Alabama, and Louisiana, and Arkansas, and they had relatively low to moderate quit rates compared to others in December. And so it's not so clear cut. It's definitely a factor, right? You also have to look at just the what unemployment insurance looks like in every state. That's a state program, and so that varies dramatically. And you know, plenty of other factors. But, you know, yeah, there are some similarities there for sure.
2.7% in Illinois, 5.5% in Alaska, which you mentioned. So inflation is not going away anytime soon. Is that what you all are also reporting on?
Yeah, so you know, there are a few indicators that came out this week that pretty much signal that it's going to be around well into 2022. I was actually just talking to a Bank of America economist earlier today, and he's saying, you know, we're going to see inflation cool, but it's still going to be pretty high in 2023. So, you know, we're all hoping for this to cool sooner than later, obviously, but, you know, we saw on, I think it was Tuesday, the producer price index, so that tracks business costs, that shot up twice as much as we expected. And we saw retail sales yesterday, you know, surge almost twice as much as anticipated as well. So, you know, consumer demand is there. People are still buying and spending a lot, even with inflation so high. And businesses are having to contend with higher costs. And so over time, you know, that's going to trickle down and most likely end up showing up as higher prices for goods and services.
Yeah, I suppose so. But it is interesting, isn't it, that while inflation is on the rise, people are spending more, at least for the time being. It's Ben Wink from the economy, an economy reporter at businessinsider.com. Interesting stuff, Ben. More reporting like that on their site. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch, Joan Salzman, senior reporter at CNET, joins us again. Welcome back, Joan. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Thanks for your help the other day. Outside the Wintrust Business Lunch, we had a conversation and have posted it on my Facebook page and at WGNradio.com about how to watch the movies nominated for Best Picture. And it's no easy task. It will require some work. Let's talk about what's happening in Ukraine. I heard that there was this hack or a cyber attack. Who got attacked and what's the strategy there?
Yeah, there was a cyber attack that hit the websites of Ukraine's defense ministry and army websites, as well as the interfaces of two of the country's largest banks on Tuesday. A top Ukrainian cybersecurity official said it was the largest assault of its kind in the country's history.
Well, that is kind of intriguing. I mean, mostly you don't want people to get hurt, but if a country wanted to attack another country, you would also attack its cyber structure. We've seen that happen to companies in the United States, but you sort of get a feel for what war is going to be like now, don't you?
Yeah, and of course, obviously, this comes at a time when there's certainly a lot of elevated tensions around Russia. No one's been attributed, these attacks haven't been attributed to anyone, but Russia is believed to be mounting multiple cyber attacks on Ukraine as part of an effort to destabilize the country's government and economy.
I was wondering if they were going to do that to the United States, if we're seen as an ally. Ukraine is not part of NATO, of course, but I wonder if they would also do that to West European countries or the United States. We haven't seen that, huh?
Well, we certainly have seen that there have been cyber attacks in the past, in the sense of, you know, I bet you recall that during the not most recent election, but the one before that, there were these accusations.
Oh, sure.
That
but relative to
of Russian based, yeah.
Yeah, but not relative to what's happening right now.
No, not at least as far as I know. But this attack in the Ukraine itself was definitely large scale.
Facebook is updating its corporate values. Okay, talk to us about that.
Right. So Facebook, of course, is undergoing a sort of reinvention. They've changed their name to Meta, and this reinvention is extending now to their corporate values. So they're changing it to things like move fast. It used to be move fast and break things. They got rid of the break things part because critics would say you've broken a lot and we're not okay with that. Also, build awesome things is one of their values now. And the one that sparks sort of the most conversation is one called Meta Mates Me, which is a reference to a naval phrase, which is shipmate self, a way of kind of prioritizing yourself within the broader understanding of your role at Facebook and at Meta.
Is there criticism of that? So if the ship goes down, we all die. So you got to take care of the ship first, then your shipmate, and then yourself. That seems to be a sort of selfless, good approach. Are people critical of that?
Yeah, the people are critical. For one, I mean, the first thing that people were critical about was that it just sounds dumb. Meta makes me. Uh-huh. But, you know, there are people that work at Meta, at Facebook, that are questioning, you know, if the company should be creating new products and creating new catchphrases without fixing all the problems that it already has.
Yeah, I get that. Talk to me about Gmail. Changes are going to take place this spring. Is that right?
Yeah, of course. Google's email service is ubiquitous. It has more than a billion people using it. And so it's going to be getting a makeover. Some people might have already seen it. They began rolling out an update for some users this month, and all the changes should reach all Gmail users in April. But the idea is that it's going to introduce a new way to use additional Google Workspace apps while browsing your email without having to toggle in between different things.
Well, I'm sure we'll all hate it because we always hate when anybody, you know, even if it's good, everybody hates change. Well, I guess it's time to talk about Wordle now, as all radio conversations do. What's news on the Wordle front?
Well, in the last week, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know Wordle was previously bought by the New York Times. It actually made that journey, that transition to the New York Times website, and it has not been without some bumps in the road. Some people are claiming that Wordle is harder now. There was a problem where people that had previously been using Wordle, their win streaks and guest distributions weren't imported properly. That's been fixed. And then there's also this sort of fear that a subscription-based news site might eventually hide the game behind a paywall. Although the creator of Wordle said that was one of the things he insisted would not happen when he sold.
Yeah, well, he's not the creator or the owner of it anymore. Although it just seems with so many knockoffs out there, if I had to pay for it, I'll just go get one of the free versions. I do think Agora, A-G-O-R-A, is still not a word, and yet Wordle tells me that it is. I don't know how hard the words are supposed to be, but if I was looking at A-G-O-R, I would not have guessed A. I don't know that word. Joan, do you know that word?
You know, I minored in Latin, so it rings a bell, but I might have guessed it without being able to define it for you on site.
Why did you minor in Latin?
Oh, because I majored in journalism and I needed something sensible to fall back on.
And you thought that was sensible?
No.
That's fascinating. Well, it's good to talk to you as always, Joan. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much.
Joan Salzman is with CNET. I took a stroll yesterday from our offices on the river at 303 East Wacker to the city clerk's office in the government complex where the Thompson Building, the federal building is, City Hall is, the county building right there. And as I walked across town yesterday, I noticed that there just aren't as many people out as there used to be. Of course, it was a cold February day too, but I don't suppose any of that's a big surprise. The question is, are people coming back downtown? The Chicago Loop Alliance pays a lot of attention to this. The president is Michael Edwards. Mike, thanks for joining us again. You're on WGN. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
What's the trend been for the last couple of years and maybe the last few months?
Well, I would say beginning June or July of last year, we began to see a slow rebound in the city. In the loop for a number of reasons. And we just released our January report, and all of the, you know, all of Chicago really, but the loop in particular has always struggled with January and February due largely to the weather and the lack of tourist traffic. But leading up to and into the holiday, things were pretty good downtown. Most of our indicators, pedestrian counts, parking volumes, hotel occupancy, even parking decks, you know, we're all trending in the right direction, still below 2019 levels, you know, by a significant amount, but certainly better than the year before.
So let's you and I talk about those numbers. Are we going to talk about the January report or the whole past year?
Well, in terms of the January report, you know, we were all a bit nervous about the impact of the Omicron variant. And not surprisingly, our office occupancy dropped from 37% to about 27%. And we think, you know, a lot of that was, and our company included, we told our employees just to stay home until we sort of sorted out this highly transferable variant. Mm-hmm. And beginning February 1, our staff was told to come back to the office, and unless there's some, you know, crazy thing going on with the pandemic. And I think that's really reflective of what a lot of groups, a lot of businesses downtown were doing. A lot of them were saying they were going to come back in January. Of course, that was delayed. But I am noticing, and I heard your comments at the top of the hour or the top of the broadcast. I was running in the loop yesterday morning, and I noticed, you know, waves of people similar to what it used to look like coming from the metro stations and some of the other stations. So I do think it's picked up. I know it's picked up in our own building.
I'm glad to hear that. And when you say the business occupancy is 27%, so in other words, all these tall buildings where businesses the occupancy rate of those offices is 27% for every 100. Yeah. 73 of them are not occupied. What was it pre-pandemic?
It would have been, 85 or 95%.
So,
it's sort of interesting. A lot of the movement, the buildings that are doing well are the more modern buildings, and the buildings that are having a more difficult time are what are referred to as vintage buildings, which unfortunately there's a lot of in the loop.
Why is there that difference?
I think it's the floor plate, how they're aligned, the size of the spaces, the technology in the lobby. Yeah. You can program elevators now to do crazy things, not so much in older buildings.
Yeah, our elevators here, you don't push a button inside the elevator anymore. And that was instituted about the beginning of the pandemic, maybe coincidentally, but I saw it as sort of a safety measure. So do we care where people are working as long as they're working? If you ran a restaurant, I guess, in the loop, this is devastating to you, but at least people are working, right?
Right. Well, I think for a long time, we were really focused on getting the office worker back into the loop. But what we found beginning last summer, and certainly picked up a lot in the fall, is these other sectors that are back. So we now have our 58,000 students back in the loop. So they weren't here the year before. Residential apartments, and especially for sale housing, is off the charts currently, way better than even pre-pandemic. So a lot of people that waited to move into downtown are now doing that. And then maybe the most visible is that the theaters are back. And so when Broadway in Chicago and all of the great cultural institutions, came back strong because using a vaccination card and an ID. On a weekend, we might have 9 venues going with multiple shows. There might be 30 or 40,000 people downtown that come downtown in the afternoon and into the evening. And that has really saved a lot of our storefront businesses and restaurants that you referred to earlier.
Can you tell us about hotel occupancy rates? What is that like?
Well, right now they're horrible. And, kind of typical for Chicago, but, really bad. But in December, which is part of our report, they continued to be performing way under 2019 levels. They were, at about 60%, which is a struggle for them. But they were filled with people that were coming down for what some people call the festive season. So between for the theaters at night, at beginning in the fall, and then, of course, all of the holiday activities associated with all the great things you can do outside and in Millennium Park and up and down State Street and at the Mag Mile, they stayed in hotels. And so hotels were performing at a level, certainly way under what we would want them to be, but, better than, again, the year before.
Do you think that as Omicron fades and the weather gets warmer, what's your expectation for this summer?
Well, our expectation is things are going to come back pretty strong and pretty quick. That's our hope. My other hope is that all of us, both as individuals, have now learned how to manage our COVID, right? We know when we should or shouldn't wear a mask, when it's advisable, to or not to, do social distancing. And so individuals now, I go for a run and people move out of my way. I move out of other people's way because we don't want to necessarily breathe on each other, right? And then on the other hand, the businesses, the restaurants and the stores and the office buildings and the hotels, you know, have all put in place things that manage COVID. So I think even if another variant comes, I think it will, we will continue to manage it better. And if we're underperforming now, we may underperform 2019 this year. But I think eventually we'll get back to something approaching normal.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to be 2020 and 2021 in 2022. And yeah, I guess 19 and 18 are the goals. And let's hope that things continue to trend up. Michael Edwards is the president and CEO of the Chicago Loop Alliance. It's always fascinating.
Thank you so
much. Yeah, my best to all of the businesses and people downtown. I'm one of them. It's 1244 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. State Farm is raising auto insurance rates in Illinois. The Bloomington-based company says rates are going up nearly 5% beginning in April, but will remain below pre-pandemic levels. The average annual increase will be about $36. The increase is less than half of competitor Allstate, which upped its rates by 12%. Northbrook-based Allstate's increase is the steepest one-time auto rate hike by a major carrier in recent Illinois history. Insurers have been raising rates to reflect the higher cost of replacing cars that are totaled in crashes. Crane's reports higher used car prices have also raised insurers' costs of settling claims. A shareholder revolt could be brewing inside McDonald's. Activist investor Carl Icahn says he's prepared to nominate directors at McDonald's if the company continues to use suppliers that house pregnant pigs in small crates. He calls the practice inhumane. Bloomberg reports Icahn is continuing talks with McDonald's about his concern. He says the company has failed to make good on its promise to phase out the use of so-called sow gestation stalls, which are too small in length and width for pigs to move or even lie down. McDonald's declined to comment. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now with the stinky business of food report, here is Steve Alexander.
As I mentioned, today's a big day on our food calendar, a big smelly day. No, John, it's not cheese, it's not fish. Happy National Cabbage Day.
Yes, happy National Cabbage Day to you as well. Definitely a day worth celebrating.
That is Angela Thomas of Bonnie Plants, which sells a lot of cabbage plants and has given away a lot of cabbage money in its annual cabbage growing contest for third graders.
Every year, teachers and schools across the country register for the cabbage program, which is a completely free program for them.
Illinois' winner this year is Mia Menchev of Oak Ridge Elementary in Palos Hills. She won $1,000 from Bonnie Plants. The contest has been going on for many years, and millions of kids have taken part.
And they receive what we call a cabbage plug. So it's a little bit smaller than a starter plant, but they're not growing it from seed.
I posted Mia's photo at WGNradio.com. Search for the business of food, and you'll see her with her winning cabbage plant, which is bigger than she is.
We actually have a very specific variety of cabbage that we use for this program, which is an oversized variety. It's a lot more fun for the kids to grow a cabbage, like you said, as big as them, or in some cases, even bigger than them.
And it's a great teaching tool.
It is one of the first opportunities for them to learn about where their food comes from and why gardening and agriculture in general are so important to the world.
Registration for this year's contest is open for the next month or so.
You go to BonnieCabbageProgram.com.
And just curious about the company, Bonnie Plants. Is there a Bonnie?
Yes. The company was created in 1918 by Livingston and his wife, Bonnie Polk. And once they realized they had a successful business going and wanted to make it official, he named the business after his wife.
Okay. So congrats to Cabbage Winter. Mia Menchev of Oak Ridge Elementary, hats, and a shout out to her teacher too, Susan McMillan. I have a feeling that Mia's cabbage memories will be much more pleasant than the ones many of us have of the stench that permeated the house when Mom was cooking cabbage. It's something you just don't forget. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth on the transportation front today. Let's start and talk about Tesla. What's the news there, Amy?
Yeah, so we have a little bit of news from National Highway Traffic Safety Administration stuff today on a couple fronts. But one of those is another investigation, another probe has been launched into Tesla. This time, you know, last time we talked about it, it was because they were in the kind of rolling through stop signs, doing that sort of California stop. They were slowing down, but not really stopping and kept on going. Now it's the opposite problem. So what's happening now, there have been complaints, over 350 complaints, in fact, of this kind of phantom braking. So the Tesla Models 3 and Y, this covers about 416,000 vehicles from 2021 and 2022 models. Essentially, they'll just come to a stop. Now imagine that's at a highway speed. And so the concern is that you would just kind of come to this very quick stop and you could cause a collision, and a lot of safety concerns arise from that. So that's the latest probe from the U.S. regulators around Tesla. But there's some good news from that agency as well. And that is, they have also just approved adaptive headlights. So we've all been in this situation. You're driving, you come around a corner, there's a car coming towards you at night, and their headlights are so bright, you can't see what's happening. So these adaptive headlights, these already exist in Europe. This was part of the infrastructure bill, so this will be signed in and made very official in the next sometime in the next couple of days. But essentially, these sort of smart headlights will dim part of the clusters of LED lights and focus more on unoccupied road space instead of shining right at you. So that it would kind of help you see the road ahead versus just having to focus right on those headlights that are, you know, kind of shooting the high beams right in your eyes. So there's a lot of safety implications for this. So this will be really interesting to see this rolling out.
I'm glad someone's paying attention to that because you're right. We've all been there. And it seems like some headlights are brighter than others and are pointed right at you. Uber is in the news. What do you see there?
Yeah, so previously, if you didn't really know who gave you, you know, how your rating was on Uber. But now, they just announced this yesterday, that essentially you're going to see a breakdown of how many drivers have left you what rating. It won't show you what driver, so you won't be able to say, oh, it was that guy just the other day. But you will be able to see how many 1-star, 2-star, 3, and so on, to see kind of what your rating is. It's a little hard to find. You can get it from the website. You can log in, or in the app, you can go to the browser data section and then tap on the view my ratings, and you'll be able to see. So if you're trying to maybe increase your score, maybe you're slamming doors, things like that, Uber recommended door slamming. Don't do that. That's a thing. Clean up after yourself. Be respectful. Be on time. Buckle your seatbelts, things like that. Common sense stuff to keep your ratings high. You know, and we see this on the driver. So now it's kind of a little more transparent both directions, because when we summon an Uber, it says, okay, this is so-and-so coming. And, you know, she has a 3 or 4 or 5-star rating. But now we know what drivers are how they're rating us.
Talk to me about, I haven't seen this in a while, 3G. Most of us are on 4G and we're all migrating to 5G. 3G is still a thing, huh?
It's still a thing for now. And so AT&T's 3G network is shutting down this week. Other carriers are following suit, other points in the year. But we think of you know, these networks being just about our phones. And a lot of the conversation has been about, hey, migrate your phone, we're moving to this other network. But it really involves a lot of other devices as well. So CNN Business did some reporting on this to take a look at kind of other devices you might want to be looking at. Home alarm systems. If you've had your alarm system for a very long time, it's usually a quick fix. A technician just needs to come and switch the box so you could get to at least a 4G network. You might have it already, but it's worth a shot to give your alarm company a call just to make sure, because it might look like it's functioning properly, but it might actually, in an emergency, have trouble connecting with the company when you need that emergency response. Other things that it might be impacting, like car crash notifications and roadside assistance from things like OnStar. That could be part of it. Even some personal medical devices like fall detectors, things like that, worth checking into just to kind of make sure. Because again, it might look like it's working, but in that moment that you need it, the functionality might be there. So if you're using one of those devices, worth a call to the company just to make sure they've migrated. There's nothing you needed to do. Mm-hmm. Some car operating systems might have a software update just in case it's an older system that's relying on 3G. You might see that push through, especially Chevy, Buick, and Cadillac. Those are simple software upgrades that are drivers will just connect their systems to a 4G network and keep going. But things to be on the lookout for and things to be thinking about, just as more and more of our devices rely on that connection in order to function.
What's the headline anyway on AirTags?
Yeah, so right away when Apple AirTags came out, you know, and of course that helps you track your devices. So it's harder to lose your keys when you can go to your phone and say, you know, where are my keys? But immediately there was a lot of privacy concerns. Some domestic violence organizations were very concerned that they could facilitate stalking if you were trying to leave an abusive situation, things like that. So essentially Apple said earlier today that they plan to add some more safeguards to AirTags to cut down on unwanted tracking, to notify people people a little faster if, you know, with a sound to notify them that there's an AirTag in place, things like that, and disconnect it if as you move away from the original paired device.
Amy Guth, we're out of time. All interesting stories today. Thanks for helping us out.
Thanks so much, John.